goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this bi-week edition of the Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host, publisher of the Bison Report, Ross Uglum, and joining me, you know what, joining me right away tonight is my lead football analyst at Bison Report, Trevor Gebhardt. Trev, how are we doing?
Ross, I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you doing?
Ah, great, and It's a fun week. Those of you that follow us or follow me on social media probably have figured out that I've been in Green Bay since Sunday, covered the Packers game against Denver on Sunday, and talked to both Billy Turner and Darius Shepherd after that game. And now, of course, tomorrow, or actually I would guess when you're listening to it, it'll be today, Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles come to town. So very exciting time to be covering some former Bison, and something that I'm really enjoying doing so far. We're having a fantastic time out here for sure. So to dive into the news, there isn't much. North Dakota State, knock on wood, yet again, stayed pretty healthy. No new injuries really to report, or at least none that Coach Entz has reported. They did hold out Dimitri Williams for one more week. I think that makes a ton of sense. They had a lot of talented backs. I mean, they have a lot of talented backs. And by holding Dimitri out of the UC Davis game, they bought him 2 weeks instead of one. And that type of deal, I think, is always helpful. They were able to get through the game with the backs that they had. I think it was the right move. The other thing that we really want you guys to know is that from right now through the end of September, we're 50% off at the Bison Report. You hear me at the end of every show. And plenty on social media tell you guys that, hey, the number one way that you can support Trevor and I in this venture is to become a member over at Bison Report. Right now, it's 50% off. I think the total ends up being, you know, $3-4 a month once you get to 50% off. And I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but boy, you know, we get 7, 8, 9, 10 of you listeners to sign up, and it makes a huge deal in our budget and the things we're able to bring to you guys at Bison Report. It's just massive, and I haven't stepped off my pledge at all, even with this discount, and hopefully the increase in memberships that the discount brings. I'm still going to do $5 of every membership to the MAC Fund. That's Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer. I'm going to personally donate $5 to the MAC Fund in honor of Landon Solberg and in honor of what Landon's Light is trying to accomplish. That's something that's extremely important to me, and that's not going to change just because we're offering a discount. As we mentioned before, this is a bi-week pod. North Dakota State does not have a game this Saturday, but that doesn't mean that you guys don't get a podcast. We've got to give the people what they want. And the last thing, I wanted to point out that there are a couple of notable FCS pollsters, a couple of notable FCS minds that have had James Madison hop North Dakota State in the polls. NDSU still number one, I think, in both polls, but the Dukes are getting some steam after North Dakota State struggled with UC Davis in the dome there, and I can't say that that's something I agree with, but frankly, our friends over at the Bison Illustrated podcast have already talked that one to death, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean when our man Swanee gets going, he really gets going. And we're going to leave that alone and kind of get moving. Trev, let's talk some UC Davis. I got to ask you, you know, is Davis that good, or do the Bison really have something to work on? I just want to take like 30 seconds to remind everybody that we're talking about a double-digit win over a top four team like it's some sort of crisis. I just want people to understand where North Dakota State football is at right now, in the sense that not beating the absolute crap out of a top four team in the nation has people kind of fidgeting in their seats.
So there is a school in California that goes by the nickname Golden Bears that UC Davis also played this year, and the score of that game was eerily similar to the one in Fargo. Both teams put up 27 points, but NDSU surrendered three more than UC Davis, or excuse me, than Cal did. And Cal is currently 4-0. They've also beaten a ranked Washington squad on the road.
Yeah, the Golden Bears are no joke.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I hate to say this. I cringe to say that because I have the same viewpoint of the Southland as I do the Pac-12. I'm not a fan, and I'm very outspoken about it. But the Pac-12 does seem to have taken a step up this year. And Cal is a part of that. And UC Davis played them just as tough as they did NDSU. Both of those games were on the road. Both games they're very much geared up for because you're playing a in-state, I don't know if you can necessarily call it a rival, but it's an in-state rival with UC Davis and Cal playing. And then UC Davis wanting to make their own stamp in FCS football. Last year they were on the cusp, being a quarterfinal team, losing to the eventual runners-up, Eastern Washington. So them coming to Fargo and making a statement was, I don't know, if I'm in their shoes, probably a higher priority than beating Cal. And it seems like certain people want to put the panic button on and go, well, they struggled with them. Well, they were a 25.5-point favorite, which was probably a little ambitious, and I don't think, quite frankly, gave UC Davis enough credit. I'm sure that there was probably bulletin board material for him, but to say that there was a struggle or to say that this was something that is concerning, I think is a knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, I'd just like to point out for anybody that is known to throw a few shekels around, the Ross Uglum preview score predictions are 4-0 against the spread. They are 4-0. That includes two predictions that NDSU would cover and two predictions that they would not. So just so you guys understand, I am extremely, extremely locked in this season. And I, you know, as I think you did, Trevor, I think we both predicted that North Dakota State would not cover against UC Davis.
Right.
So I want to ask you, how good is Jake Mayer? Because I think we get a little bit into a position where we fall in love with some of these receivers when they have a lion's share of the production. And then we assume when those guys leave that the quarterback wasn't that good. And hey, that happens. There are quarterbacks that have stud receivers that when that receiver leaves or that maybe two guys leave, they fall to pieces. That absolutely does happen. We kind of thought it might happen with Taron Christian after Winicky and Goddard left, and it sort of didn't. I mean, they didn't pose as much of a threat as they did when those two were there, but Christian, I would have to say, had a pretty decent senior season. I thought Jake Mayer looked great.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if you look right at a stat line, I mean, the three interceptions stand out, and I think part of that was pressing a little bit, and Code Green stepping up at the right times. I don't know. I mean, he throws for three bills on the road in Fargo. He looked very poised, much more than quarterbacks normally do coming into the Fargo Dome for the first time. I think the last time I saw somebody that poised was Taron Christian. And even before that, his name escapes me, but from Coastal Carolina, Alex something or other. But that was the second time he came there.
Alex Ross. I remember him.
Yeah, Alex Ross.
Good player.
I've actually met a few people out here that have played with him, and they say nothing but great things about that individual. But Jake Mayer, I think, showed why he is being looked at as much as he is from NFL scouts. To say he's going to be drafted definitively, I think the jury's still out. But to say that he's not going to be, I think, would be wrong. So he's got a lot of tangible and intangible assets that I think are very positive. So they weren't exactly playing a slouch.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I mean, I would give two of those interceptions to I'd give one to kind of luck or NDSU making a great play on the deflected screen.
Last one?
Yeah, that's not that's not one. If I'm grading, I'm not grading that as a huge negative for Mayer. And then the one that he threw to Jabril was probably ill-advised, but that was on the offensive line for allowing that pressure. I would definitely assign the Tutsi interception to Mayer. That was not a great read on his part, but those other two were really tough, and I just thought the kid was good.
Well, he took a lick from Tuska early on that I thought, okay, this guy, he's really going to be challenged now, because you don't see quarterbacks bounce back from that. A lot of times you take a smoke like that, you don't, their poise just kind of goes out the window and they're just trying to survive.
And he took them over and over and over again. That was kind of my thing was, boy, he was taking shots. And the sack totals wouldn't tell you that. North Dakota State, I think, was only credited with a single sack. It was that Tuska sack. But, man, if this was, you know, somebody that that charted, if this was a university where they charted pressures, they chart quarterback hits, but if they charted pressures, I would guess that it was, you know, in the double digits. On my notes, I had six quarterback hits. It looks like North Dakota State has seven. I mean, they were getting after this kid for sure, and they were still pretty productive. In fact, North Dakota State got out gained by almost 70 yards, 422 to 354. Coach Henson in his press conference said, yeah, I don't think they give them extra. You know, there are no bonus points for yards allowed. And red zone defense has certainly been something that North Dakota State football has hung their hat on in the past. But 422 game yards is a lot for Code Green. I think anybody would admit that. Trevor, did you see more issues with the tackling or with the coverage? Because I would say that the running game was all right, but they still only averaged 3.4 yards a carry. I think the 312 receiving yards were more concerning.
Right. Well, there was definitely some coverage issues. There were a couple times where there was some miscommunication and guys weren't being guarded. There was one phenomenal check. I can't remember what the result or the end of the drive was, but Mayer checked them out of a bad situation. And I knew what exactly was coming. They ran a drag route near the NDSU sideline and gained, I don't know, 20 or 30 yards or so on the third down, I believe it was.
Yeah, it's either a third or a fourth down. I know the exact play you're talking about. That shallow cross was absolutely lethal.
You know, I think something like that on tape will help Mayer's NFL draft stock, because he's showing situationally that he can put his team in the right position to win. So you have a field general like that making checks. I don't know how much you can do, but that was definitely more of a coverage instance than a tackling issue, because it wasn't really a breaking tackle problem, you know, like with, Indiana State running back. He keeps coming up in these pods. What was his
Shakir,
name?
You can't keep Shakir Bell's name out of your mouth, except when you forget it.
I can't. He brings up the things that I remember.
And you didn't even have to try to tackle him.
I know, but he is haunting me still to this day. So Cole Green that night couldn't tackle him. And that was more of a tackling issue, whereas in this instance, obviously it was the passing game that hurt him a little bit. And it was more coverage. But I think you have a guy that's in Mayer controlling all of it, that is the root cause. So definitely things to clean up, and I think it's quality tape to learn from. And the fact that you can still come out with a double-digit win is, I think it's nothing but positive, without being biased, and that's the truth.
Still just 16 points allowed, though, and I think that has to be another kind of reality check. And I'm not trying to condescend, you know, to Bison fans. I understand the passion. I understand that the expectations are there because of the success that they've already had. But this is a situation where, you know, Entz is right. They don't give bonus points for yards allowed. The fact that Michael Tutsi, and we'll talk about him next, but the fact that Michael Tutsi, you know, is able to make that play, the fact that Dave Brown and Matt Entz put him in position to make that play, and that's something I want you to kind of help me break down as well, that cover two replace, which is a little bit of a disguised coverage, but something that they've gone to in the red zone before. red zone defense matters, and you will rarely lose. You will rarely lose games when the opponent is kicking field goals, even multiple field goals, and that's something where, you know, that game you guys won against Montana comes to mind. Everybody was kicking field goals.
Yeah, two touchdowns the whole game.
So talk to me a little bit about the impact that Michael Tutsy has been able to have, and I'd like to have you sort of explain that cover two replace that they called. I'm not sure if that's what NDSU calls it. I'm sure it isn't. But where, you know, in a standard cover two shell, your deep safeties, which would have been Tutsy and Hendricks, would normally, you know, be your deep defenders. But in the red zone, they had Tutsy as the flat defender with the inside basically of the slant was his responsibility. And boy, did he take responsibility.
Yeah, you're basically, to put it in simple terms, you're taking a third layer of a defense and adding it to the second layer. That's probably the easiest way I can put it for people to understand it. And at that point, when you're in Tutsy shoes, it's basically understanding, okay, what's the set? So is it single man, or is it one attached and one receiver outside, or is it twins? What's the set, and then what concepts can they run off that you've seen on tape? So I think that comes down to two things. One, the coach is putting in Mr. That's My Ball, Michael Tutsy, in the right spot, and then him spending the time watching the tape and going, what concepts do they run in these situations, and just capitalizing.
Absolutely. So this was kind of, and again, we are talking about extremely high expectations, and we're kind of on a sliding scale. But I would say that this was Trey Lance's first kind of struggle, if you will. And it's hard. And you're laughing. And honestly, I get it. Because you know what? The kid ran the ball for 49 yards and a touchdown and threw for another 156. Again, zero turnovers, which, I mean, I got to tell you, if you're not going to turn the ball over, you're likely not going to lose at North Dakota State with this defense. But I had a tweet out last week about the historically highest adjusted yards per attempt. It's an advanced statistic that I love to use. It takes yards per attempt, gives you 20 yards for every touchdown, and takes away 45 yards for every interception. And it kind of gives an overview of overall quarterback performance, at least as a passer. And Trey's was better than the best. Through three games, it was better than the best AYA that any Bison quarterback has had during a single season since they got in Division I, and it was that way by a lot. It was like 14.1. Well, his AYA on Saturday was 6.7. Very pedestrian, and I mean like early NDSU Tony Staus level pedestrian. Now, one game against a good opponent by a freshman, I get it. But how important was it, do you think, for this kid to, we can call it struggle, you can call it whatever you want, but how important was it for him to find a way to win when they weren't up 20 the whole game?
It's necessary growing pains. I mean, I can't tell you how, and I am literally saying this from what a player's viewpoint would be, because that is my viewpoint of the program, right? So, like, for this kid to develop long term and for him to thrive in the situations that they need him to thrive in, aka the playoffs and national championship games, this was extremely necessary. The fact that they can still come out with a win is even more encouraging, because he doesn't have the statistical line that he did in the previous three games. He doesn't have the eye-popping stats that you want to see in video games. But the kid made plays when they mattered most, and that's a sign of a bona fide winner. And he really hadn't been tested to this point, and I don't think there was any doubt that he would pass a test with flying colors. But the fact that it's now out there and that it's proven, and he has done it with two very impressive touchdown runs. One was eerily similar to a number 11 that previously played for the Bison. In fact, I'm in that clip at the very end if you look closely, so I guess shameless plug there for the number 3. But I thought Trey Lance made the plays at the times that mattered most, and
One of my best friends in the world, number 16, did the exact same thing. And seeing that gives me even more excitement about this kid's future.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, I think that at some point, you know, maybe the 2020 or the 2021 team, if you start looking at some of these kids' years, you know, their years in school, maybe the 20 or the 21 team will have that 13 swag where they don't actually have to win close games. They're just going to smoke everyone. But even 2013 just about lost to David Johnson. So you never really, really know. And this was a game I felt like was just important for them to win in the sense that they had the Christian Watson fumble. They had a couple of defensive gaffes. They had a number of times where they really tried to let UC Davis back in the game, but there was zero panic. And that's something I've seen, and this isn't a Kansas State podcast, but that's something that I've seen as a major difference in Kansas State's program and just shows you kind of what Bison Pride is about and what this coaching staff, whether it started with Craig and down to Chris and down to Matt, it doesn't matter, but the lack of panic and the ability to handle adversity and just be like, yep, all right, no problem, next play, we've got this. That's something that I think is evident in both programs right now, and something you really saw on Saturday was this ability to make multiple mistakes. And North Dakota State did. They made multiple mistakes. But this ability to make multiple mistakes and let it just kind of break on them like a water on a rock. Yep, we're good. Nope, you know, no problem. We're just going to keep fighting, and we're going to win. And what does it say to you that they still won? I mean, they found a way to get this game instead of having it be that blemish on the schedule.
That's what it comes down to. I mean, you look at 2013, that team was on a whole new level, man. And even we had a struggle. You know, we had to score two fourth quarter touchdowns. One was on a fourth down. And that team just found a way to win. And you're not going to play perfect every Saturday. That's just the way things are, but your preparation when it meets opportunity, the great ones find a way, and this crew did, and they're very young. And it's hard not to look at it from a green and gold lens, but that really is the case. And obviously some bias in our mindset and how we view it to an extent, but I don't know how many young teams in this country, FCS or FBS, could get put in that type of scenario and have a similar result. Not many. And it comes down to culture, because the preparation that they've put in is clearly extensive, and is, I would guarantee, it's mimicking the same things we did. Coach Kramer's still there. He's still in those same values and concepts that were ingrained into my brain at 18. And clearly that has had an effect on these guys, because if that wasn't there all summer and fall camp, I don't know if you have a W. I mean, it's hard to say, but just from a former player's eyes, it's encouraging to see adversity strike and still come out with a win where you're like, that really wasn't that bad at the end of the day.
For sure. Let's dip into the Bison Report mailbag. I want to apologize a little bit. I just realized that on a bye week, we're a little light on stuff to talk about. I wish I would have given you guys, the listeners, a little bit more time to get involved. But hey, shouts to the three guys that hopped right in when I basically said, hey, you've got 15 minutes. I hope you're on social media right now. I'm going to take this first one. This is Jay from Twitter asking about the recruiting board and the top two or three targets. And this is something I, you know, is almost dangerous for me to say, just because so much of why people come to Bison Report is for the recruiting. Guys, I got to tell you, things are pretty much wrapped up. The staff is basically going to work their asses off until December to keep this group together. Their primary target was Felix Anadike. And guess what? They just got a commitment from Felix Anadike. And the guys that they have, the 18 scholarship athletes plus the walk-ons that they have committed, this is what they kind of have room to roll with. There might be one more target just because Luke Dwyer left, and that obviously opens up a scholarship. But they've got to keep guys committed, whether a Big Ten team comes in on TK Marshall, whether Wisconsin decides, you know what, maybe we do have a scholarship for Joe Stoffel. Maybe somebody else, although he did get hurt, so probably not, gets interested in three-star Seth Anderson from Moorhead. That the recruiting does not end when the commitment happens. And Trev, maybe you can expand on that a little bit. I mean, once you made your commitment to North Dakota State, did your regional recruiter and your position coach stop talking to you?
If anything, it goes the other way. I mean, it's just how they recruit you is different because they know that you're a part of the family now. So the way you communicate is as such. So for example, I mean, I had quite a recruiting process. I had about three or four guys recruit me simply because guys were leaving the program to go into other places, new jobs. But every time that a coach left, there was nothing hanging in the balance for me because I had a coach visit the school the next week. So there was someone in the halls at Sioux Falls, Washington, coming in to talk to me and reassure me that everything was the same. Scholarship was still there, so on and so forth. So when you're in those shoes, obviously those are questions that naturally come to mind, but you never really truly stop recruiting a kid because you never know what circumstances are going on in their life. You never know what needs that their family might have or that kid might have that change. Everybody changes and grows, and everybody changes and grows at different rates and speed. So I think just staying in front of 16 to 18 year old kids is extremely important, and even more so in today's age where they have instant satisfaction at their fingertips with smartphones. And I think making more touch points with them, whether it's a quick phone call or a school visit or interaction through Twitter, whatever it is now, I think just making sure that they still feel welcome, that they're a part of the family, is important.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And like I said, Jay, we really appreciate the question. Stick around. We're going to try and make sure Bison Report is still worth your time, regardless of the fact that you know, there's not a lot of football recruiting news. I tell you though, hoops recruiting is heating up. The Bison need a point guard. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. It's heating up. We'll get you some Bison hoops recruiting scoop. Nate and I are all over that, so you don't worry your little head. We're going to be all right. Derek from Twitter: game that scares you the most out of the next four. And this one I'm excited about because I think you and I have a different opinion on this, which is fine. But I think the answer is probably this Illinois State game coming up next Saturday. They've been very, very good this season. They've got a winning record. They've got, I think, the best offensive player in James Robinson in the conference. And it is. It is the first road test for Trey Lance in conference. Normal is not a great town to get to. It's going to be a situation where it's not dead like Western, but they're kind of going to have to create their own environment. They're kind of going to have to get themselves up for that game. It's a noon game, which is kind of a little bit weird. I have interesting vibes about Illinois State. I think they're going to be absolutely locked in for Northern Iowa on homecoming, and I think they're going to be super locked in for South Dakota State. A lot of people would, I think, circle that South Dakota State. I haven't seen enough from Jabari Gibbs to tell me that South Dakota State can close the talent gap between the two schools. I have a pretty low level of concern about that South Dakota State game. But Trev, unless you've changed your mind since the pre-production meeting, I don't think that we have the same opinion here.
Not even close, my man. Not even close. Yes, okay, so Illinois State and SDSU, those are the obvious ones that kind of stick out because of the talent.
And they're both there, on the road.
In just recent history. Those I'm not worried about simply because I feel like, especially coming off a bye week, NDSU is phenomenal. Just go look at recent history and what's been done there. 2 weeks to prepare for that game. Not a concern. Northern Iowa, huge rivalry matchup, then homecoming. So a lot of cool stuff going on that week. I don't have a concern there. It will be a battle. I mean, it'll be a fight, just like any Northern Iowa game. But the end result, I'm not worried about a W. But the one I am, and I'm really not just saying this to get people talking, is Missouri State. That is probably my biggest concern. And when we were talking about this and we saw the question come through, that's instantly where my mind went. And I had a reference point off of two seasons. One is 2012, the other is 2015. And my mind instantly went, gosh, those losses in 2012, when we lost to Indiana State. And in 2015, when they suffered their second loss to USD, I'm like, those had to have been the third Valley game of the season. So I look it up, and sure enough, both of those were the third Valley game of the year against teams that weren't exactly top-tier quality on paper. And then I went through other years just out of curiosity, and sure enough, 2016 against South Dakota State was the third Valley game of the year. Now, different quality opponent. You have Dallas Goedert, Jake Winicky, Taryn Christian going off, and they ran a completely different offense than they did the previous portion of that season. So that one's kind of an outlier. But you have two examples where it's kind of a trap game. You got all these big hype games. You got a top 10 matchup in UC Davis. You got a top 10 matchup in Illinois State. Maybe a top 10 matchup with Northern Iowa. You have a top 5 matchup with South Dakota State all surrounding it. And you have that one kind of sore thumb sticking out when the Valley grind kind of catches up and you're in the middle of it. And you have a Missouri State team who is gearing up wholeheartedly to come and knock you off. And it's happened twice at the same point in the season. And those are the ones, as a coach, that's probably what they're concerned about too, because it's easy to get up for Northern Iowa. It's easy to get up for South Dakota State. It's easy to get up for a game when you haven't played in 2 weeks. It's very easy to let your guard down against a team who has no contention to win the Valley, but their season will be made by beating you. So that one does concern me. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, it's just tough for me. Like a guy who just – you played it, and so you have that immeasurable amount of experience, and you bring that. And like I obviously did not play. I was a very marginal Division III golfer. I'm coming from it from like, okay, well, I've seen Missouri State play and they stink. So it's hard for me to be worried about them for the NDSU's sake. But then there are those intangibles. And that's the things like that you understand that for me, I'm like, no, I've seen them on tape. They suck. And it's hard. And it, but you know, you guys lost to two teams that did not end up with great records. And you were literal national champion, so you bring a fantastic perspective. Last question is from Tim from Facebook, and he asks, "Will there be a power back that emerges from this committee? And if so, will it happen this year?" And I think yes to a degree, Tim. I think you're seeing though what you're going to see, and that is they are going to use Ty Brooks. Hey. You want to know what the 57-yard run was? That was power. That was Ty Brooks going on the backside of the center on power, which is, you know, normally an A-gap or an up-the-middle run, and you used your 5'9", 175-pound speedster to run that play. And that does not mean that power backs aren't necessary. I'm just saying, like, Kobe and Ty can run that stuff as well. What you'll see as the season goes on is plenty of Cofield, especially in weather that isn't great. And as Sabian Clark's, because the guy's just a phenomenal athlete, his size is something that you would rarely see at tailback at North Dakota State. As the season progresses, you will see, I think, Sabian Clark have a better grasp of the playbook, be somebody that they trust a little bit more, especially these road games with bad weather. I think the power back situation is likely to be Sabine and Adam with a little bit of Dimitri, because you know what? Dimitri's a big kid, and you wouldn't necessarily think that all the time just because he is a wide receiver convert. He's big. Trevor, I want to give you one last shot here to kind of tell people what it's like for a player on a bye week, especially if you're kind of nursing a nick here or there.
I mean, I'm probably not going to give anything groundbreaking to anybody here, but it's kind of nice because you get to kind of just hit the reset button a little bit. I mean, you're, especially for a young team, you're going through the grind, you're getting in a new routine, you're kind of trying to figure out your identity and where you fit in the team as a whole. But now you have a good, solid idea, but it's a long season, so you're still trying to make your stamp on the team in the year. It gives you time to reflect on that. It gives you time to dive into some tape more. And it gives you time to just catch up on any honestly, schoolwork. as strange as it is for me to bring up, because I went to school because I could play football. I was smart, don't get me wrong, but football is the vehicle that drove that. And it's, you know, you get to play some catch up there, catch up on some bruises and nicks. You don't have to take as many reps in practice. It's just more of a mental week, and having that reset button, just like anybody, any human being, really, you need to kind of have that at some point. But you don't have a ton of time doing it, so you don't want to rest on your laurels too much, because Valley play will creep up on you in a heartbeat. So there's a plan there that's in place to mimic that mindset. And I think they'll be in good hands come Monday next week, a couple full pad of practices, and then you take off the pads usually about Wednesday versus on a Thursday. So you get a couple more days there too.
All right, Trev, I appreciate you coming on as always. I think you give a great perspective to the fans. Guys, if you've lasted this long in this podcast, I really appreciate that a lot. We really appreciate that at Bison Report just as a whole. The number one way, as I mentioned, that you can support us in this venture is to become a VIP member right now. It's just dirt cheap. Try us out for a month. Hey, first month's a dollar, $9.99 after that. But you can get a monthly rate that's a lot lower than that if you upgrade to the annual subscription. Right now, we're 50% off annual. It's like $3 or $4 a month if you divvy it out. It's just a phenomenal value. You get access to all the other 24/7 sites too. So if you want to keep tabs on the Gophers or K-State, where Coach Kleiman is at now, or maybe you're a Bison fan from Wisconsin, you want to read Badger 24/7, you can do all that as well. Heck, maybe you're an NFL fan and you want to read Packer Report or Viking Update. Guess what? All those VIP articles, boom, free, on the house, on us, on Bison Report. And as I've mentioned a number of times, guys, we are going to do, or I am personally going to do, $5 out of my own pocket for each new NDSU Bison Report subscriber. That's going to go to the MAC Fund, Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer, in honor of Landon Solberg, in honor of Landon's light, something that we want to do. Hey, if you don't want to subscribe and you still want to join the fight, just go look for the MAC Fund on Google. Look at my Twitter account. Look at my Facebook page. It's real easy to find, and that's a great way to do it as well. Thank you, everyone, for listening one last time, and go Bison.